When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
At Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care. And we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
Welcome to the Ladies Who London podcast. How are you, listeners? I hope you're well. I'm back. It's Alex here.
Hey, and it's Fiona. Hello. Hello.
Hey, we haven't dubbed her yet.
She's I'm clinging on.
I wonder if we should do a little opener like Emily and I used to do. I wonder if we should do that. I don't know.
Maybe we should. It does feel like there's a... It'd be nice to have a sort of formal...
Like it needs something, maybe.
Yeah.
The start.
We can work on that.
We'll work on that. Anyway, how are you this week?
I'm good. Yes, busy. Beautiful, beautiful day on whichever day it was. Monday. Monday. Blue sky. Picture perfect. The light was lovely. It was warm. And then yesterday, really quite grey and cold and windy. And it was like, what are you doing, London? I've just put my winter coat. I'm done with
that's
winter.
That's April, isn't it, really? Actually, here yesterday in Hampshire, we had the lovely day. So we obviously switched over.
Yeah.
Gorgeous.
Yeah. Fair enough. It is lovely. When it's lovely, it's so lovely. Yeah. And it's so beautiful at this time of year.
Yeah,
you know, and the light and the thing. So,
in fact, yesterday I went. I had a visit from a friend who is a friend of the podcast, Susie Waddell, who does used to do. We haven't used. We might have to get her to do something else, another sting for us.
Yeah.
We used to have her as our voice of podcast pedestal and all of that as well. So she came down to visit me, and so we had a lovely day, walking slowly around Alton. It was rather nice.
Very good.
And on that note, I should say thank you so much to everyone who got in touch with your well wishes after my cancer news last week. I really appreciate it. I haven't been able to respond to everybody yet, but I will. It's just I'm very tired and I haven't got the brain space for too much, but I will get around to you. But thank you so much. I had a meeting with the surgeon on Monday. He's very happy with how it went. I'll need 6 months of chemo, so that's where we're at. So thank you all so much for your lovely messages. It meant a lot. And yeah, like I said last week, I wasn't sure if I should share the news with you, but it kind of felt right. So at least you're all in the know. And if I disappear randomly, you'll know why. Because I'm off being, injected with all sorts of stuff. But anyway. But that's it. So any other kind of parish notices or messages from anyone?
I don't think, lots of comments from last week's episode. My favourite came from Lavinia, who said, "Roaring romp," which I think that should be our target.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, I really enjoyed Molly Cutpurse. She's just brilliant. And this is the thing I love about this pod, is that we find out so much more about some really interesting people. And again, she's coming on the Fantasy Girls Night Out, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, heavens, yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Her and a whole heap of the 40 elephants. And it's going to be a riot and we're going to get into serious trouble. But...
Yes. And I was just instantly now picturing her with the person that I'm mostly talking about today in a room and various other I've got a room full of people now. I'm thinking, who are all these people? They get on?
I guess I was gonna say, I'd love to see how they all interact and are like, you did what? So on that note, who are we talking about this week?
Well, I'm gonna leave you slightly in suspense a little longer and tell you first how I was inspired to talk about her, because I was at Cricklewood Railway Station the other day, waiting for a train, as you do. And on the there's a big mural as you walk up the kind of the ramp towards the platform, and then there's another mural on the platform. And so I thought, I'm going to go and look at that. And it is, it's graphics, it's just letters, and it spells out Queen of the Air.
Ooh.
And I thought, that's nice. And I thought, well, it must be related to the other plaque, the mural on the ramp, which is all about Handley Page, who were quite a big employer in Cricklewood. And I didn't realise when I was growing up quite nearby that Cricklewood had an airfield.
Okay.
And they had some of the first international flights out of London took off from Cricklewood.
Really?
Yeah.
Of all
and
places.
So,
also,
no,
just
thinking,
pausing for a moment to just really enjoy the name Cricklewood.
Yes.
It's a great name. I've always thought this. I'm always like, it sounds like a sort of slightly mysterious little village and Cricklewood, and there's like elves and fairies and nymphs. And actually, it's just Fiona tarting around looking at holes in walls and things like that.
Well, I was going to say, for anyone who is not kind of local to London, let's just explain a little bit of context. Cricklewood is it's northwest London. Mm-hmm. If you from the Tyburn Tree, where the executions were at Marble Arch, if you go in a straight line up the A5, the Roman Road that just goes straight out of London, about 20 minutes, half an hour, you go through Kilburn and you arrive in Cricklewood, and it's where sort of Edwardian, it's London as at the edge of London in about 1920. So it's right. Just between big red brick Edwardian houses and semi-detached suburban London. It's sort of the bottom edge of metro land, just about, if anyone knows that, but sort of big suburbs that expanded in the 20s. Mm. And it's, I like it. I grew up nearby and it's things, but it's not a swanky neighbourhood, let's say. It's not glamorous. It's not where you think of people doing international travel to Paris and things. But it turns out, actually, there was a very practical reason why there was an airfield here, because Handley Page made aeroplanes. They were the first public company in Britain to manufacture aeroplanes.
Right.
And once you've made an aeroplane, what do you do with it? You have to deliver it to someone.
Yep.
And you don't put it on a lorry to deliver it. That would be mad.
You've got an inbuilt delivery system on these things.
Yeah, exactly. But you need an airfield to take off from. So they built the airfield so they could just take off with their planes to deliver them to you know, the purchasers. And then it made sense to have flights. So 1919, they launched Handley Planes Airlines, which was the second British airline. And they did offer flights, international flights from Cricklewood, but they the only outbound customs was in Hounslow.
Brilliant.
So passengers had to be collected from Hounslow, which is quite a lot further west in London. So maybe, you know, it wasn't a brilliant success.
For those who don't know Hounslow, that is pretty much Heathrow.
It's Heathrow, yeah. So, yeah. And then 1924, so only about 5 years later, they get amalgamated with the couple of other airlines that exist and become Imperial Airlines, which is British Airways, right, kind of early days. And then they moved down to Croydon, which was a bigger airfield. So Cricklewood Airfield had this little sort of, from 1912 to 1929, Cricklewood had an airfield with
Brilliant.
International flights.
Is it still there?
So, no. It's housing now.
Of course.
If you look on the map, there is quite a distinctive sort of oval-shaped couple of streets of housing, which is where the airfield was. So it's easy to find, but gone. So I assumed, firstly, that the Queen of the Air was related to the airfield.
Yes.
But I think probably not, actually, because she got her pilot's license in 1929, just as the airfield closed down.
So they're just adopting her.
Yeah. So the Queen of the Air lived nearby in Cricklewood, and she was Amy Johnson.
Ah, now. This is a good topic.
And I have to admit, I in the past have sometimes confused my female pilots of the early years. So I thought, right, when I saw her, I was like, okay, I didn't know she was local to here, and I'm going to go and look her up properly and get my head around what she did. And the first bit of sort of headline news about what she did, she was the first woman to fly solo to London to Australia.
Yeah.
That was her groundbreaking kind of thing in
is so impressive.
Yeah, absolutely. And
100 years ago, it's incredible.
The kind of the context of how she did it as well is sort of extraordinary as well. So she wanted to break the record, which was 13 days. That was her target. And that's why she was sort of inspired to do it. We'll come back to why it didn't quite work a bit more later on, but she landed in India during the monsoon.
And it's not going to help.
Didn't help, and her plane was damaged. And she said later, it took 10 men and me 2 whole days and nights to put old Jason back together again. And
now is this an assumed voice for her?
I noticed
you're recycling your Queen impression right there.
Well, that's the trouble. It can slide a little bit easily into the Queen. But I listened, and what is lovely is there are quite a lot of clips of her talking that you can hear. And there's something so much richer if you can hear someone as well as read about them.
Absolutely.
It's just fabulous. And there's quite a difference in her accent as well. And I got a bit fixated by her accent. And there's bits where it's quite like the Queen, but it's also interesting, it changes quite a bit between the different recordings. So I think she
got a bit Cricklewood at times.
Oh, no. I think what she's got is okay, so let's backtrack. She was born in Hull in 1903.
Yay!
And I think what creeps out in her accent more so the early recordings is Hull.
Yeah.
And she's got quite an odd, her A sound is quite, I did a little bit of linguistics when I was at university, and I quite like accents and things, so I find it quite interesting. But she was born, her father was a fishmonger, it was a fish import export business. Mm-hmm. Had one of her couple of generations back been a mayor of Hull, so you know, I think
decently placed
family. Yeah, absolutely. So she was born 1903 in the summer, I think July, but summertime. And the Wright brothers, who do the first heavier-than-air flight, do their flight, that is the 17th of December 1903.
Wow.
So she is 6 months old as the very first plane takes off.
I love it when things like that are put into context and you go, oh, yeah, you know.
Yeah, just a little scrawly baby going, rah, you know. Yep. But she grows up in Hull. She does school and things. She goes to studies economics at Sheffield University, which I didn't do economics, but I was at Sheffield.
Well, I was at Hull, so there we go.
There you go. Yeah, I was just when you squeaked earlier, I thought, now is that you're not from Hull, but you must have a Hull connection.
No, I went to uni there.
Yeah. She comes down to London. She's working as a secretary. And she kind of, I think, just one day goes past near an airfield, a bit further north, Edgware, Stag Lane Airfield. Mm-hmm. And she kind of sees the biplanes there. And she's like, I wonder. So she starts learning to fly as a hobby, effectively. And she gets her license in July 1929.
Gosh. Now, do we know what the sort of situation here is with women getting flying licences?
Intriguingly, the stuff I was reading, it didn't kind of say that in itself was
particularly unusual.
Particularly unusual. I think what was unusual is that it was quite an expensive business,
right,
flying.
Yeah.
And we'll come back to this in a moment. So quite a lot of the people who were flying are aristocratic people who have got the time and the money to do it.
Still the same now, isn't it, really?
Well, let's face it. Yeah. So the fact that she's doing this as a part-time thing, along, you know, she's working and she's doing it in her spare time is is the thing. She also is the first woman to get her C license, which is the sort of ground crew technical thing. Okay. So that's, I think, shows a sort of a thoroughness about her, that she's not just going to do the flying. She's going to do the, you know, how it all works as well, the nuts and bolts and things. And before she set off to go to Australia, her longest flight that she'd done was from London to Hull.
Okay.
You know, it's quite a lot shorter than Australia.
Slightly.
Yeah. And so one of the things she had to do, she reads about somebody who set the record going to Australia, and she's kind of obsessed with this. And she said, you know, I was so interested in this, but the money, so much money was needed. How could I find hundreds of pounds to do this? And in the end, she gets some from her father, okay, and some from someone who becomes sort of a little bit of a patron, almost, a man called Lord Wakefield, who was a businessman and philanthropist, and actually Lord Mayor of London at one point. And so she manages to raise the money, and then she says, now the rush begins. It's a race against the monsoons. Can I get through before they break? In my diary, 9th of May the 5th is ringed in red as the last day that I can make a start. In breathless haste, I arrange my petrol and oil supplies, maps, tools and kit. 10 days before I'm due to start, I haven't an aeroplane. Then I am introduced to Jason, a very ordinary machine, but now a dear and valued friend.
Aww. Does she name him Jason, or is he already named Jason?
That's she named him Jason.
Yeah,
and it is something to do with the logo of her father's fish business.
Oh, lovely. Okay.
So, and Jason is a biplane. Mm. So they're sort of with two sets of wings kind of above and below each other, and the kind of struts holding it together, and a single propeller. I think he's a second-hand Tavlon Gypsy Moth.
Yeah.
And you look at pictures, and he's just so tiny and things. And I get exactly the same thing that I think when I look at the Golden Hind. Mm. And you compare the Golden Hind with like HMS Belfast, even the other big ships nowadays. You just think the people who set off around the world, not quite knowing where they were going in those days, in these tiny, tiny yes. little ships. And it just seems like madness in a way. It's so much bravado.
I know, it's mad. Yeah, so whenever I walk past the Golden Hind, I've had people say, but surely Francis Drake didn't sail the high seas in that.
In that, yeah.
And I'm like, yeah, I know. And you sort of think it's not, you get one big wave and you're absolutely stuffed. I mean, it's just, you know.
Yeah.
I've had meals bigger than the Golden Hind. It's crazy.
Yeah. And she also, because she wanted to go the fastest route, she just drew a straight line on the map.
As you would, yeah.
Of where you go. And it took her over some quite inhospitable terrain and things like that. And you think, nowadays, you fly, you don't really worry so much about what's underneath you because you're confident you're going to stay in the air.
Yeah.
In those days.
Or I don't know, because you still sort of fly a little bit based on geopolitics, don't you? Like if there's some dodgy stuff going on in a country that you want to avoid, you do go around the edge.
You go around it. Yeah, that's true. She's got her route and she's got her plane and off she sets. And she gets to, I think she gets to Iraq in 6 days.
Okay.
And that's the point at which the media start going, oh, hang on, interesting. Oh, this is, oh, you know, so that then there's a bit more attention kind of on her. She carries on and stopping to refuel. So she can't change her route because there's fuel sort of depots, you know, fuel arranged for her at certain places and things. And she doesn't make it through before the monsoons hit. This is the problem. So they land in India, and Jason, how did she describe it? He goes into something. He goes into a hedge or something like this, and is damaged, and has to they spend two whole days, her and 10 men, putting him back together again with repairs from a shirt, which was a shirt which had been made out of a plane. So a First World War era plane had, I don't know, died, crashed nearby. And the material from that had been kind of ripped up and made into shirts.
Waste not, want not, hey?
So now, perfect opportunity to gather this shirt material back up and use it to repair her plane with.
Oh, goodness.
So she sets off again. But that the delay over that means that she doesn't get the record. But she gets to Australia in 19 days. And
impressive.
Like I say, the first woman to fly solo to do that, and gets a huge welcome in Australia and becomes, you know, sort of big celebrity and things. She comes back to Britain and I couldn't find any record of that she'd actually done this tour, but there is a bit of a clip of her talking about a tour she's going to do around Britain, basically inspiring other people to learn flying.
Good for her.
This is the most fabulous thing. And she sort of says, you know, I'm going to be doing these talks. And if you want to come on up, ask me any questions about, you know, if I can be any help to you in encouraging you and like helping you to learn to fly. It's such a good thing. It's going to be so good for the youth of Britain. And for Britain, it's such a fabulous thing and stuff. Really kind of interesting. I mean, I've got a friend who works in sort of, you know, promoting sciences and things in educational terms, and it sounds exactly so much like that same message, kind of all these years on and things. And then she carries on and does various other sort of long distance flights that set records. She flies to Moscow at some point. She sets a record from London to Cape Town. She also gets married. She marries another pilot, and they were flying somewhere together. And 8 hours after they met, he proposed.
Fantastic, isn't it? I love it. Didn't she meet him when she fell into his arms or something, crashed? And is that her? Maybe it's not. I have this story in my head about crashing somewhere, and he helped her, and then they did this flight. I might be wrong, but someone else. But
yeah, it's it might well be.
Wonderfully romantic.
Yeah, they were known in the press as the flying sweethearts, and you know, they did some long distance flights together. She did other stuff, solo stuff, but she also realized that flying kind of wasn't a sustainable career in a way, so she started modeling. And I'm sure, you know, some of the celebrity attention and the reason the press loved her is because she was very photogenic and things. But what I love, actually, if you look at photos, there are some photos of her looking very glamorous. And you know, ladies started going into the hairdresser saying, I want a Johnson wave. You know, yeah. She's got this lovely sort of, what is it? There's a word for the sort of curls.
Is it the finger waves, I think.
Finger waves, yeah. Exactly. It's quite close cropped.
Yeah.
And there's those photos, but there's also photos of her, you know, looking a little bit more dishevelled and like her hair's flying off at a weird angle in the wind and things. And you know, and ones of her standing by a plane in sort of sturdy trousers and a sort of sensible shirt and things. So there's a sort of whole mixture of different images that we get of her. And I quite like that she kind of fills all those possibilities. But she also starts designing bags and things.
Brilliant.
And that feels in a way like quite a modern thing, like, oh, I'm a celebrity, now I shall design a handbag. You know. But it makes perfect sense.
Bring out a biography and all of that.
And you know, travel bags. So sensible bags for women to travel with.
It's on brand.
It's on brand. It's probably a very practical thing because, you know, I suspect women do want different bags to men.
Yeah. You know?
So that's all good. And she was working for a sort of aviation business, flying regular flights over the Solent and things like that. And then she also, in the run-up to war, the Second World War, she was sort of employed to fly around over the Channel so that searchlight batteries could practice finding her in the sky.
Amazing!
Slightly worrying, searchlight batteries and aircraft gun, anti-aircraft gun.
Oh, right, yeah.
Okay. So presumably they weren't firing at her, they were just practicing finding her. So that's all good. But when the Second World War breaks out, all the planes are requisitioned effectively. So she's made redundant from that job. And not surprisingly, Wei signs up with the Air Transport Auxiliary. Mm. Have you talked about them before on the pod? I feel like
I'm pretty sure we have. We definitely had our Spitfire sisters.
Yeah, so that might be where
we did. I did talk about Mary Ellis, but I feel like maybe that was on Global Tea Break and not on the podcast. But essentially, the method where it was not entirely, but very almost exclusively women who. Mm. Essentially delivered the planes from the factories to the airfields, and you know, they'd turn up, they didn't know what they were flying that day, and they would just be like, oh, get in that one and take it there. And a great story about Mary Ellis where she got to one of the airfields and she got out of the cockpit and they had to get a chit sign so that people knew that it had been delivered. She got out, and all these men were standing around looking at the plane. She said, oh, can I go and get the chit sign? And they were like, no, we're just waiting for the pilot to come out. And she was like, I'm the pilot. And they didn't believe her. And they had to go and have a look to check before they would go and sign it. So yeah, this is what a lot of people, the people are like, oh, women didn't fly Spitfires. They damn well did. They just didn't do it on the front line.
And also though, so it seemed like from something I was reading that you know, some of the planes, they hadn't quite finished making them yet. Yes. In some ways, so not all of the dials were in. They didn't have the radio, or they certainly weren't allowed to use the radio. Yep. Or whatever, because they were
also flying blind.
So absolutely kind of unsung
heroes.
Incredibly
dangerous. And I think there's a lot of women who died doing that, because like you say, sometimes the planes weren't quite 100% functional, and of course they're still flying, you know, in airspace that is being used by the enemy, and sometimes at night, and so it was incredibly dangerous.
Yeah, absolutely. So she was. That's what she was doing at the sort of beginning of the war, and sadly, you know, only at the beginning of the war, because January 1941, she was delivering a plane from. Due to be from Blackpool to Oxford, when it seems like she maybe ran out of fuel or something, but crashed in the kind of the Thames Estuary near Herne Bay in Kent. And the first thing you think about that is, well, is that between Blackpool and Oxford?
No, it's not. That's off course.
So it was quite bad weather. Well, it was very bad weather, so maybe that, but there's various things about this crash and her death that are slightly unexplained, and therefore lots of kind of possible not conspiracy theories but theories. So a plane was seen going down and a parachute was seen by a ship, and they went off to kind of set off to rescue, and they think they might have seen two bodies in the water, or like one person waving, someone in a helmet and a high-pitched voice waving and shouting for help, and also another body. And so if there was another person, who was that other person? That's a sort of question. There's theories therefore that maybe she was on some sort of secret mission, or you know, stuff,
a second operation mincemeat war.
So the captain of the ship, Lieutenant Colonel Commander Walter Fletcher, dives in to try and rescue them, and makes it to either a bit of debris or the other body or whatever, and then is kind of overcome by the cold. And then he's sort of fished out okay, but dies a few days later from the kind of, you know, hypothermia or whatever. And no sign of Amy Johnson's body or this other body. Her sort of waterproof bag with her logbook and her diary and things wash up a few days later. So we know that it was her plane, but there's also these other circumstances, a bit hazy, including one suggestion that it might have been friendly fire, that someone nearby had contacted a plane and they'd failed twice to give the correct code, so they were shot at, and then, you know, a day later they read in the news that Amy Johnson's plane has crashed or whatever, and he was like, oh no. Other people say, well, yeah, okay, but that where he was stationed, that's quite a long way away from where she was, so does that make sense? All these different things. There is in 2013, a possible answer came to light in a Doctor Who comic called one called A Wing and a Prayer was the story title. And it's Doctor Who with Clara Oswald as companion. And there's a thing that, according to the Doctor, Amy Johnson's death is a fixed point in time. So she has to be seen to die for us, okay, you know, for the rest of the world. But as long as we think she's died, then that fixed point in time is preserved. So it's so Clara says, but that's okay, we can save her and we can take her somewhere else. So perhaps she was saved by Dr. Who and Clara and taken to the planet Cornucopia.
Oh yes, naturally.
Yeah. Naturally. So I think that clarifies that.
Yeah, I think so.
You know. So so actually, oh, I'm just doing some quick maths. She was 38.
Right.
When she died. And, you know, one of those just, you think, well, what else would she have done? What would she have achieved in later life? And yeah, things. And in a way, you know, she achieved so much anyway. And there is that slight thing that if someone has, you know, sort of mysterious death or, I mean, people dying in plane crashes is a thing that makes them more famous than they would otherwise be somehow. Mm. At times, you know, there's a few sort of examples you could think of. And what I think is good is that we remember what she did when she was alive rather yeah. than, you know, she was very glamorous at times and all these things that she did when she was alive. So in a way. Yeah.
We start her story with, you know, she was the first woman to do this, that and the other. Whereas often with Buddy Holly, you start with, well, he died in a plane crash and go from there.
Yeah.
But, you know, I'm a massive Buddy Holly fan, so I'm not saying anything bad about him. Yeah. But with Amy Johnson, that bit kind of comes later. And this is what she did. And
I suppose also because it was a thing that came as a result of her work. Like, you know, Buddy Holly was travelling, whereas she was flying planes day in, day out and during the war. And, you know, so there is a much higher level of risk, obviously, attached to that. So it shouldn't be such a sort of shock in a way. But she...
Look, Bumble knows you're exhausted by dating. All the must not take yourself too seriously and 6-1 since that matters. And... what do I even say other than, hey? Well, that's why they're introducing an all-new Bumble, with exciting features to make compatibility easier, starting the chat better, and dating safer. They've changed, so you don't have to. Download the new Bumble now.
So, she's got a couple of statues. She's got, well, in terms of London as well, Jason, her plane, mm-hmm. is at the Science Museum.
Is he? Oh, I didn't know that.
He is. And not only that, he's in the Flight Gallery, which is way up the top of the museum and is always completely empty.
I love the Flight Gallery.
And it's you just go up there, you're like, oh my God, all this stuff. And other notable planes, my mind has now gone entirely blank.
well, the Wright brothers play, but yes, I don't know if that's one of.
I'm having a blank.
But I feel like it must be. There's Spitfires in there.
I think there is. Yeah, I used to do a regular walk around South Kensington, and every time I would say, "Oh, and you know, one of the things you can see in the Science Museum is Amy Johnson's De Havilland Gypsy Moth." I didn't know he was called Jason.
I mean, that's great. Isn't
how
it?
Much happier would I have been saying, "Jason, go and see Jason."
Yeah. Go and say hi.
Yeah. And she has some blue plaques. Mm-hmm. She has one in Cricklewood, one somewhere else, and a green one in Prince's Risborough as well. So three places where she lived, she's got plaques. Nice. She had a memorial service in St Martin in the Fields in Trafalgar Sorry. Square. And she's commemorated on the Air Force's memorial in Runnymede. So those are the sort of commemorative things in a way that you know, around and about. But there's a 1974 statue of her in Prospect Street in Hull.
Yes, I remember seeing that actually.
Okay.
Mm.
Yes.
When I was at uni there.
What did you make of it?
Oh, it's a long time ago now. It's about 70 years since I was at university. I probably always saw it in a state of half-cutness, so I don't know that I remember it particularly.
Yeah.
I just remember it being there.
Yeah. Well, of the statues there are, I think I prefer the other ones,
right,
is what I'm going to say. And it might be because somebody said that actually, I couldn't find any close-up pictures of it, but it might be that it was made of fairly soft stone, so it's weathered
yeah,
a bit. So it looks a little bit sort of clunky, okay, in a way. And she's standing on quite a tall pedestal and standing quite upright, and it's quite... Whereas there are two statues by the same sculptor, Stephen Melton, okay, which there's one in Herne Hill, near where her plane crashed, and another one in Hull, near where she lived. And they are a bronze statue of her kind of walking along and looking at the sky. And it's a much more naturalistic. You can kind of see how statuary has changed in the last, 40 years or whatever. So these were put up in 2016, which was both of them. Yeah, 75th anniversary. And the one in Herne Hill is kind of looking out to sea at Herne Bay, looking out to sea. And both of them have text on them. So she's got some text on her arm, which is slightly weird, I have to say. It looks like a very elaborate tattoo.
Maybe she had that. We don't know.
Maybe. So what it says on her arm is, "We women are just now on the threshold of another career, which has so far been regarded as the strict province of man, that of aeronautical engineering."
And is that one of her
Fair
quotes?
Enough. I'm assuming that's a quote. Then March 1937.
So
yes. And then on the seam of her jacket, and I couldn't find a photo of this, so I don't know where exactly this is, but it also says, which I'm taking as another quote from the year before, "Progress means always trying to go one better, to get more out of something by trial and error." By trial and error. "By crying for the moon, by hitching one's wagon to a star, by never saying die, so the world progresses."
Ooh.
Which is rather nice, I think.
I love that as a quote.
And the one in Herne Bay is also dedicated, is a monument to women of aviation and engineering and all those who served in the air transport auxiliary. So it's not just her, it's broadened out a bit. There is also nearby, before I say this, she's also got quite a lot of roads named after her and some airplane restoration centres and an engineering department. And so she's, and the restaurants at a hotel, which a big chain of hotels, which has one at Gatwick and one at Heathrow, Amy's Restaurant and Bar. So
okay. Yeah. I mean
I'm always slightly underwhelmed by the restaurant tribute.
Yeah. I mean, I always say to people, you're never really famous in the UK unless you've had a pub named after you. So I mean, a restaurant, I guess, is okay.
The one that springs to mind as well is the Russell Hotel, was it, that used to have the Virginia Woolf Bar and Grill.
Brilliant.
It's something about the bar and grill combo that you just like, did she really, did Virginia Woolf, did she like a big good bar and grill?
Yeah. Well, she used to go to the Harvester quite a lot. I mean, who knows?
Yeah, yeah. So there is also in Herne Bay, there is a bench nearby. And I think this is, I couldn't quite be absolutely sure about this, but I think they had a project where they got six artists to create benches relating to different things and different people. So her one was created by a lady called Jane Priston, and it is a biplane bench.
Ooh.
So rather delightfully, the bench and the sort of top of the table make the wings, and then it's got a propeller.
Fantastic.
On the front. And then next to that, there is a big information board about Amy Johnson and stuff. So there's more information there than there is by the statue, which is a little bit of a walk away. Someone had kind of reviewed it online and said the bench is a bit of fun furniture on the promenade and children will love being photographed in it. The two wings serve as a bench and table, so you could even picnic here.
yep, that's the point.
That's kind of the point. But somebody else made a much better comment, which I'll come back to in a moment.
And we'll try and put photos of these up on the show notes. So
yes.
If you go into the description of the podcast, there'll be a link to the show notes. Go and have a little look at all of these.
Yeah.
And I'll try and put some a couple of the clips of her as well on there too. So if you want to go and have a look.
Yes. Yeah. And there's quite lots of bits on YouTube that are images of her as a slideshow over her talking, because I don't think that there might not be much video of it. They're sort of like showreel, like news, Pathé News type sort of stuff as well and things of it. But absolutely, go and have a look and a listen. She did there was a letter she wrote to a friend quite near the end of her life where she said, "I hope the gods will watch over you this year and I wish you the best of luck, brackets, the only useful thing not yet taxed."
I love it.
Which I love as well, because you get a different sense of her from that.
Yeah.
And all those recording things, they're all well and good, but they are all like she's on public show, she's talking properly, whereas that's a little glimpse into a kind of you know normal life and things. And it the memorial, the mural at Cricklewood, which was what kind of prompted me to start thinking about her, was put up by an artist called Lac Wenner, and it's part of a collaboration between City Hall and the Tate, marking 100 years since women got the vote. So presumably went up in 5 years ago now, whatever it is.
Yeah, that would be 5 years.
And the project is called LDN WMN, which I think is kind of London women with no vowels. So it's artists
vowels
by women.
Vowels are overrated.
artworks by women and non-binary artists.
Right.
And I haven't come across them. I don't think I've come across any others, but yeah. what it made me think, it kind of comes full circle. I mean, you've talked certainly, I think I've talked as well on the pod about the lack of statues of women.
Mm.
And absolutely, you know, this triggered me. I saw it and it triggered me to start thinking about it. Now, it's on the platform. It's on the side of the platform, but it's kind of very much at one end. And I've used that railway station quite a few times recently, and it was the first time I'd spotted it. I'd not seen it quite a lot of times. So if I was on the other platform looking across at it, maybe it's more visible from there.
Mm.
But I was a bit like, well, it's here and it's fabulous and I'm glad it's here. And this proves that, you know, we need the statues and the things. At the same time, I could easily have missed it.
Yeah, like, and did.
And did several times miss it and things. But I think the last word should go to somebody else who was talking about the bench, and she said it is a delightful, quirky bench. You can sit at it and bring to mind Amy's words, "Believe nothing to be impossible."
Aww.
And I thought, well, that's a quote that we should all remember more and live up to.
Absolutely. Oh, Fiona, thank you so much. What a great shout about Amy. I covered her on Global Tea Break many, many moons ago, but it's lovely to revisit her. And she's, another of these just amazing, enterprising women who we're so used to being able to do whatever we want now mostly, not entirely. And when it comes to women in history, that just the fact that they, it was so unusual for a woman to just be like, well, I'm just going to go and do this.
And also that thing of, like, you know, flying, we kind of take it for granted nowadays.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it's a thing that everyone, we could all do. It's so cheap. It's, I mean, whether that's right or wrong is another debate. But, you know, the notion that she got her license and in less than a year, like 9 months later, flew the longest journey. Cool. Like, I mean, just astonishing. Again, bravado.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
And we may never know the secrets around surrounding her death, and if you know this extra body and all that sort of stuff is quite a conundrum. And chances are, you know, she may well have been flying a secret mission that we'll never know anything about.
Somebody must have known about it.
Somebody must have, and there must be something in a file somewhere. But maybe somewhere. You know, it's still under the official secrets. But, I mean, who knows?
Yeah,
who knows?
Yeah,
but very interesting, and does bring loads of questions to mind. It would be all these sort of secrets and things. It'd be great to have them answered at some point. But thank you so much. Fabulous.
It's always a delight to kind of have a reason to dig a little more into things that you sort of half know already. So
And listeners, if you have any links to Amy Johnson or you see any of the memorials, please send us an email, send us a message. We love hearing about you, about what you've been up to and hearing from you all. So please,
if anyone's got pictures of yourself having a picnic on the bench,
yes,
top marks for that. That's what we want
to
see.
Head down to Herne Bay, have a picnic, give it a nice little review.
I'm gonna my various family connections down that way, so next time we go, I think a little outing might be in order.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yay, fantastic. Thank you so much.
No worries.
Right, well, that is it for this week. We have it does seem like, in terms of coronation specials, that generally the consensus is for that people want a bit of a what's going to be happening throughout the ceremony and all the stuff that the people who are doing the voiceovers who might not know about these things, she says with her nerd hat on, that we're going to sort of do that and demystify a bit of the coronation ceremony. It does seem that that's the way people want to go rather than the complete random bits and pieces, which I think is quite a logical one. So that will be in 2 weeks' time. There is a poll currently up on Instagram stories. If you want to go and have your feelings known on that, then pop on today. Went up this morning, Wednesday, at about 8:30, so go and let us know. But I think that's the way it seems to be going, so I think that's what we'll do. It's exciting, isn't it, all this coming up? Might have to get my dad back on too, because he'll be doing the coronation again, so we might have to get him back on to
secrets.
I mean, I can't imagine it'd be different from last time, but he's going to be away for an entire week doing practices and things, so I know. Exciting.
One of my parents' neighbours just across the road has got her invitation.
Ooh, and how come?
She's a member of the Muslim Council of Great Britain, I think. Okay. So she's one of the faith leaders. Sort of leader stroke.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So she's going to walk in as part of a, you know, she's not just sitting in the crowd, she's walking in as part of it. So she's got a practice event and things to go.
That's amazing. Have you eyeballed the invitation?
No, not personally. I was working out how do we encourage her to show us the invitation.
It's probably behind glass now. It's like, yes. Don't touch it. How exciting. I mean, it doesn't matter what you think really about the, you know, monarchy and this, that and the other. I have mixed feelings about things like that, but you know, it's exciting to have a big kind of national event like this, isn't it?
Yeah, and I think that's what always happens. Like, even like the Platinum Jubilee last year, we were all like, yeah, it's a jubilee, yeah, it's another jubilee, yeah, you know. And then you get to about 2 weeks before, and sometimes like during that the run up, clients will be saying to me, "Oh, what are you doing for the jubilee?" And I was like, "Well, I don't know," you know. And then you get near the day, you're like, "What? It's exciting."
I know. And also for us as guys, you know, we talk about coronations in the abstract for, you know, as long as we've been guiding. We do Tower of London, we do Westminster Abbey, we talk about the Crown Jewels, Coronation Chair, we talk about, you know, the last coronation in 1952 and what happened and how it worked and what people were like and the street parties and all of that stuff. So for us, whether or not, you know, because I know some guides are very anti the monarchy, some are very pro, it's a really,
it's sort of vindication of what we've been talking about for these years.
Yeah, absolutely. It's really cool because it's we're gonna get to see it firsthand, and just lovely. Anyway, so that'll be in 2 weeks, gang. But please do drop us a line, drop us pictures, whatever. I love it when people message us about things that they've been to see from previous podcasts. Do let us know. And also, news from Emily: there's no baby yet. She's due next week, but I will keep you up to date as soon as there is a little Emily-lut, a little sproglet. I will let you know. But I checked in with her the other day and I think she's ready to pop. So keep her in your thoughts.
Yeah.
But from me and Fiona, that's it for this week. Thank you so much for popping along. We will see you next week for more fun and giggles.
Fun. Yay.
Right.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.